There it goes.
Right.
It's 9:46, so let's get started. We'd like to welcome everybody out to our Active Transportation Committee meeting this morning. Today's February 12th, and we'll now call the meeting to order. We'd like to begin, because we may have some new faces, with welcoming and introductions. I will begin. I'm Mayor Joe Shoblin, South Weaver City Mayor, and Chair of this committee for the second year, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. We'll go ahead and go around the table. Let's start over here with Katie. And make sure your mic's on so we can all hear you.
Katie Jordan, Wasatch County Regional Council.
I'm Nicole Crew with Wasatch County Regional Council staff.
Bert Cranberg with WFRC Analytics.
Jim Price with Manning.
Chris Lee with Bike Utah.
Heidi Goodhart, UDOT Penn.
Jeff Solstrini, City of Oak Creek.
Andrea Pearson, WFRC staff.
Hugh Van Wagenen, WFRC staff.
Ted Melton, WFRC.
Richard Heyer, Ogden City.
My name is Kayla Kincaid. I'm sitting in for Laura Hansen this morning. I'm a new strategic planner with UTA, and I'll be focused on AT projects and first and last mile.
Richard Brockmeyer, UDOT Planning.
Norm Searle, Riverdale City, representing Waco.
Thomas Cardrola, Stockton Town Mayor, representing Tooele County Council of Governments.
Justin Brady, Tooele City Council.
Daryl Valentine, today with Walt County.
Do you have an extra pen I can borrow?
You bet.
I'll give it back to you. Don't let me walk out with it.
I'm Austin Taylor, I work for Provo City.
Mark Bradley with Provo City.
Sharon Harvey from the City of South LA.
And you at UDOT Program Development.
Roger Borgnick, UTOM for Better Transportation.
Chad Mullins, Active Transportation Advocate.
Morgan Christrup, Intern at Get Hope, UTOM. Sarah Hodson.
Travis Wilson, Weaver, Working Health Department.
Mark Nicky, Trails Foundation, Northern Utah.
Matt Kozai, Shopping Planning and Tracking.
Mercedes Mayasis, the Lakeland Health Department.
Steve Kaufman, Ohio Administration.
Myron Wilson.
Ned Hacker with Wasatch County Regional Council.
Thank you. I think we've got Jeff. Want to introduce
him? Jeff Weather, JSK.
Okay. And
Helen Peters, Transportation Program Manager, Salt Lake County.
Awesome. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for coming this morning. We appreciate your attendance here. We will begin with an action item. Approve the minutes from the October 9th, 2019 meeting. Are there any comments or questions on this? Now I'm going to ask for a motion to approve, but please state your name before you make a motion, just because we're still learning names. I'd appreciate it. So, do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
Jeff Solstrini, I move to approve the minutes.
Thank you. And a second?
I'll give you a second. Heidi Goodhart.
Great. Thank you, Heidi. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, and the motion carries. All right. So, I just wanted to start out by talking to you about, I think we're all aware that the Wasatch Front is projected to grow double in size by 2050. And last year I went on a MAT, a mobile active transportation tour in Madison, Wisconsin, and it was a real eye-opener to me. It was like I was looking through a glass to the future, because These are the things that we're going to be faced with here in the future. In Madison, Wisconsin, they have a very intricate trail system, and most people bike or walk around there. And now the climate is similar to ours, but they plow their trails in the winter, and People still continue to use those. As our cities grow, I can see the same thing going on here along the Wasatch Front in larger cities especially, that active transportation is going to become more and more important every year, and so it's a good thing that we're getting going on this. So they even in Madison, Wisconsin have like roads dedicated to pedestrians and bicyclists, and so you know, it's a very important part of their transportation system. And as we grow, the trails are no longer just a recreational activity, but they're a way to get from point A to point B. And so, in my opinion, I think the Active Transportation Committee is probably the most important branch right now, the Wasatch Front Regional Council. I don't know if everyone is
here.
Well, definitely the funnest anyway, so, and we've got some great things coming up. I'm just thrilled to be a part of it all. I'm excited, and you're going to have the opportunity this year of, in conjunction with Chris Lee and Mike Utah, we're going to do some local mobile active transportation tours that you can be involved in, and we're really excited and looking forward to that. So keep your ears open, and we'll give you more information on that coming up. All right, we'll move then to public comment. Please come to the podium or mic, and try to keep your comments to 2 minutes or less. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Mark from Agnew Trails Foundation, Northern Utah. The reason I'm here is to announce that we are now Trails Foundation, Northern Utah. Formerly, we are continuing to be.
Is the mic on, Mark, the green light?
Now it is.
There you go. Thank you.
Trails Foundation, Northern Utah, is a new business name for Weaver Pathways. Many of you know Weaver Pathways. It was formed in 1995 as Weaver County Pathways by three activists that wanted to put a trail up Ogden Canyon. In 2002, the name was changed to Weaver Pathways from Weaver County Pathways because too many people confused it with the government agency. Well, it's been 25 years. The population in Davis and Weaver County has grown 280,000 in that period of time, which is equivalent to a new Weaver County. In the last 10 years, it's grown 90,000, which is equivalent to a new Ogden City. And with those, with the changes, there's many new residents that don't know what Weaver is. So that was a challenge with us getting recognition with the community. The other challenge is that Pathways has now evolved into a new meaning. It's more recognized with education, healthcare, and even intervention. We get phone calls sometimes for beds at night, you know, because of abusive families. So all of us combined suggest that we should rebrand ourselves. So with that, we are now Trails Foundation, Northern Utah. This is our logo. I'll get this information to you or to Katie so it can be distributed. And the purpose for that name is Trails is right up front to identify what we do. Foundation identifies that we are a nonprofit, and Northern Utah kind of gives us an identity of geographic location. We work regionally. It's about the trails, and that's another tagline we're going to maintain. So it's about the trails tagline. And again, we look forward to continuing the work that Weaver Pathways has started, and now under a new name, Trails Foundation, Northern Utah. And thank you all for your support.
Thanks so much, Mark.
So thank you, Mayor. So I just wanted to bring to everyone's attention a bill that's pending in the legislature, the last bill's pending in the legislature this time of year. But Representative Mike Winter from West Valley is sponsoring House Bill 133, which is a bill that would once again permit local entities to use the power of eminent domain to enhance trail systems. So I think it's 2008 the legislature stripped any kind of eminent domain condemnation authority for entities to condemn property for trails. Some of you may know that Mr. Winter, Representative Winter, has been an advocate for the Jordan River Trail since he was mayor of West Valley, and His vision and my vision, too, is to double track, if you will, the Jordan River Trail, so that we have a trail on both sides of that river. This affects Salt Lake County, but it, you know, this bill could conceivably be beneficial to other areas that are trying to establish trails. And as Mayor, as you noticed or noted, other jurisdictions outside of Utah have made trails a priority. As our population grows, multi-use trails are going to be ever more important. They serve a recreational goal, and they also serve an active transportation goal. You can envision with more people, we get more usage of the Jordan River Trail, and it's a spine in our valley that could be used for active transportation to commute, without using cars. So Representative Winter's bill is really just like, I hate to say this, but it's kind of like the camel's nose. He's putting guardrails on this bill at the suggestion of a lot of groups that are opposed to the idea. So the bill currently will provide that it only will allow eminent domain to be exercised to purchase property for a multi-jurisdictional trail that's on a regional trail map. That's basically to give comfort to people that are not going to be condemning trails through their backyards. I think there's a restriction on it being 100 feet away from a residential dwelling as well. And these are just restrictions, at least to make it palatable to those that are opposed to the idea altogether, and that passed the ban on this, I think in a way. But in any event, I would urge you to talk to your representatives about this bill and indicate what a benefit it can be for active transportation. For me, seeing a trail on both sides of the Jordan River offers the prospect of making that trail system more friendly and usable. I personally like the idea of recreationally of making a loop on the trail, so going back a different way than I came is attractive to me. I think that's true with others as well. It increases the capacity of the trail, and it also solves a problem that a number of local jurisdictions have along the Jordan River. No Creek is specifically, we have a problem that Jordan River Trail, through our section of the river is on the Taylorsville side. So that means that we get, our side of the river doesn't get eyes on it. And so it's a popular spot for transient camps. We're constantly cleaning that up. So putting a trail on both sides would actually put eyes on that. Moms and strollers are the best weapon against drug deals and transient camps, I think, in terms of being able to report that. So this is a bill that would enable us to just fill in those holes where we may not be able to complete a trail because of a holdout property owner. And we would still be paying fair market value for that property. We just wouldn't be paying the ransom that sometimes you see if somebody knows that you want to put something there. They can command a price that's two or three times market if they want to hold out. So this offers the benefit of maybe completion of Bonneville Shoreline Trail, Jordan River Trail, and I'm sure other regional trails. Having ridden Golden Spoke this last year and seeing that great trail all the way up to Ogden, I think our residents appreciate these types of opportunities, and this is a way to get more of them as the population continues to grow. So, possible 133.
Thanks so much, Mayor. That definitely has interest in South Weber City and Davis County and along the shoreline and everything that's going on around us. So thank you.
I just had something to say to follow up to that. That is one of the bills that we are tracking on our WFRC bill tracker on our website. So you can click on that. It'll show the status of the bill. It has a link to the bill if you want to read that information. So again, it's just a really, really good thing for our region. So.
Other public comment? Okay, hearing none. And we will move to item number 4, which is to discuss our 2020 committee goals, and I will turn the time over to Hugh.
Thanks, Mayor. As you can all see, the slide on the screen is last year's goals in their draft form. These were adopted by the committee. And the hope here is that we'll foster a little bit of discussion, and I know it's a big room and a big table, but please don't be shy to comment here. I'll just go over the last year's goals briefly. And the first goal is regional plan, so update the shared regional bicycle routes, and we were working on a long-range regional transportation plan that was adopted last May. And so we're always doing work here at WFRC on the regional network, but the formal adoption of our third-year plan did happen last year. Local plans, always pushing through our transportation land use connection program for the local communities to get their own standalone active transportation plan. Several communities in this room have those plans, but there are others that have not yet taken that on. Goal three, build, so funding and construct priority projects through shared awareness and advocacy for funding opportunities and partnering across agencies. Be interesting to hear from you collectively if it felt like some of that collaboration happened this last year. Certainly education, we do a lot of that through this committee. Just like Mayor Schoble and Mayor Silva's community are saying, right, this becomes ever more important as our population increases to talk about the benefits of active transportation, both for health reasons, community reasons, and transportation reasons, air quality reasons. And then goal five was coordinating specifically on shared mobility device regulation. That was something Mayor Silva Strini really headed up last year in the legislature to get some of the roadblocks at the state level removed for micro-mobility devices like scooters, shared scooters, legal and operating effectively. And then data collection, working on bicycle and pedestrian counts. And those efforts were spurred by a grant that Salt Lake County and Davis County and Weber County received to purchase and deploy bicycle counters. And I know those that's an ongoing process with those counties. So first impressions on these goals, do they translate into what we're trying to do this next year? What are some of the roadblocks that we see for active transportation across the region? I know Mayor Searle wrote an email back and said he'd like to help communities focus on their own local AT plans. How do we do that as a committee? Anyway, just a couple of thoughts. Anybody else, please? And I would say one thing that's unique about this committee, sorry Ted, is that it is a Mountain Land Association of Governments, MAG, and WFRC, really the whole Wasatch Front. So Jim, do you have anything as well?
Maybe to just partly because I just feel awkward when it's silence, so it's a nervousness thing. But one of the things that transportation agencies have been talking about for planning efforts in this cycle is to focus more on having the regional plan, the Utah's transportation plan, be perhaps even more of a living document, and that we actively address making it up to date, reflecting changes in local plans, perhaps even on an annual basis. And so I'm just noting that, given the fact that we adopted the Unified Plan just last year, that doesn't mean we just put that on the shelf. We just heard Mayor Silva Strini talk about potentially House Bill 133 looking at a regional plan. We need to perhaps double down on making sure that that is up to date and relevant and is always looking to local governments. What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? How does it fit into the bigger picture? So I would just say that by way of, could be a tweaking of the language of item one, but item one, goal one from last year, I think still remains relevant even in the year after adoption.
So I'm going to say, and I'm happy to talk with Mayor Searle about our strategy about getting an active transportation plan. We teamed up with the Mid-Valley cities in Salt Lake County and applied for a grant to do that. It's underway right now. So we have Myrtle Creek, Midvale, Murray, Cottonwood Heights, Holiday, Taylorsville, that are all involved in writing a plan for all of us. That so there'd be an interconnectivity in those Central Valley cities here, and ensuring the expense of that, and I think makes it cheaper for everybody to do that. So that is, I'm happy to share with you the strategy that we used to get that grant, and help you in any way I can on that. And in terms of what Ted was saying, I don't know if you want to change the language of paragraph one to talk about incorporating local plans, but we should see more local plans coming online, you know, within the next year. I'm not sure the exact timing on our plan. It's going to be sometime, I'm sure, I think, by the end of the year, by the time we get to public engagement on it, but I wouldn't have a problem amending that to, I think maybe already says what we're talking about, but we could fine tune that on.
Yeah.
Riverdale City did get a grant along with South Hog and Washington Terrace. We're all right now, we're enjoying plan with the three cities. Plan them all together. We do have our own plans with the city, but we're broadening like you are to make it bigger and more comprehensive. So it's a good thing, but yeah, there is some money out there. We appreciate it. So, thank you.
Yeah, I think we've done a great job planning and building trails, but one of the issues I think still is something that is a bit of a Gordian knot for everybody is trail maintenance and policies around that. I don't think people are completely aware that how many trails are closed in the wintertime because of lack of maintenance. And while there's nothing like you can just roll up a trail and put it in a closet, put it away, people still use it. So. I would like to have a conversation more about some way forward with trail maintenance. And another issue that I think can help us really build a lot of trail is that when Public Works do the restriping after the winter, when the paint lines have come off or worn through, that we can look at talking about strategies to coordinate with engineering and Public Works, because in my experience, Public Works many times throws up barriers to the putting down of paint for bike lanes and that sort of thing. So a little more internal within the city conversations.
I hope this isn't off topic. About 4 years ago, when the local official state of the legislature, Dan Buettner, came and spoke. I don't know if any of you were at that. He was, he organized Blue Zones communities, Blue Zone Solutions, talking about the longest lived communities and what kind of features that they have or what kind of habits they have. Anyway, because of that, Ogden kind of looked into that Blue Zones community program. And it's pretty key that that have a health partner. And so we approached IHC about partnering with us on that Blue Zones program for Ogden City. They felt it was too narrow of a region because of, you know, they serve a lot larger area, which this they serve this whole area. And this active transportation is a huge component of a Blue Zone. And I wondered if there was interest from all y'all, I'm almost from Texas, to look into something like that. I think if we had enough interest, IHC may be willing to kick in on that Blue Zone solution and kind of help us broadly with the health of our communities, which active transportation is a huge part. I'd love to talk to anybody offline about that. If you're interested, get the book Blue Zone Solutions. That'll kind of help you to understand what that's all about. But I think that would, it fits in exactly what we're trying to do with the Active Transportation Committee. But it is a big lift. So, anyway, just bring it for your attention.
Thank you, Rich. Definitely something to look into.
I'm just curious, wanted to ask Mayor Silvestrini. I designed Holiday's first bike plan. Did they implement it? You didn't mention Holiday.
Holiday is part of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. Holiday, Cottonwood Heights, Bigdale, Oak Creek, Murray, and Cabot.
All right. Jim.
If I may, just two things. One is that Utah County has a similar climate to Salt Lake County. Our trails are open year-round. But our county people find that if they were to not keep the trails plowed, they would be shot on site. The trails, and because we do count, the trail usage does drop off dramatically during this, but not completely. for instance, in one area of the Murdoch, in the summertime, the peak count is about 45,000 visits per month. In January, it's still 8,000 visits per month. If that gives you any idea of the reason that we try to keep these open, is that, yeah, people are out there and still wanting to use these all year round. The other thing is that on the regional plan, our experience has been that the regional plan and the local plans are vital to have, especially when you're needing to partner with outside agencies like UDOT. However, one of the things to keep in mind is that those plans are living documents and should be living documents, or it should at least be open to being reinterpreted. We, our experience down at the point of the mountain in Lehigh with the Technology Corridor project was that Lehigh had an existing AT plan, Madoc has an existing AT plan. When we got to the planning for the AT project, or for the Technology Corridor project, our plans did not anticipate that project very well. And we had to take a deep step back, and with the help of Terry Newell at UDOT, we took a long three-day planning session, stepped back and completely reconsidered what needed to happen in that area with that project. And what's coming out of that project is completely different than what we had planned for, and 110% better than what we had planned for. So just something to also kind of keep in mind.
Thank you, Jim. Flexibility is important.
I was just thinking a couple we could consider is under Educate, maybe tie economic development. We did a study a handful of years ago as the economic benefits and health benefits of active transportation statewide study. Talks about health under four, but not the economic development. And then maybe under coordinate, we could maybe look into wayfinding. There's been the idea of kicking that around. I think the Jordan River Commission did a wayfinding study or something recently. I know Ogden might have something, or
Did a, we have a wayfinding protocol, okay, that document that could be used.
But if we can maybe coordinate those or do something like that, might be helpful for the region.
Okay, yes, over here.
Yes, do you have some examples of local plans that you would send out to parties for some reference as well? I don't know if you have access to those, or maybe even just the communities that we could reach out to them and just get ideas on how they develop these local plans.
Yeah, absolutely. We have all that information, and we'd be happy to provide it to you, Mark, and we could send it out to this group as far as where our link is or a repository of those plans. Yeah.
All right. I'd also like to welcome Mayor Walker here. He is our vice chair, so glad to have him with us. Any other suggestions, comments?
Do you want to mention anything about your challenge?
You asked me how that might be incorporated, some type of, some ideas for goals going forward, and I appreciate the ultimate irony in this, that I'm going to say this just now. I did drive here, of course. I certainly could have used transit, and it's convenient to me, but it wasn't my particular circumstance this morning. So, but we just sort of kicked off in Draper an idle-free campaign that we did with all of our elementary schools, middle schools, and high school. And it was well-received. It was I actually thought it was one of my council members, Tasha Lowry. She was the one that kind of got behind it, and one of her friends that sort of, as a child with severe asthma, it sort of got the thing rolling. But we had the University of Utah bring out their van that monitors the air and figure out what's in it near the school zones. And I haven't seen the data yet, but it was monitoring it. We did our kickoff event at the drop-off zone, so everybody in a big diesel truck that pulled up behind us just made the point. Of course, they kept idling. It was ironic. But it got me thinking about, when you get kids to tell their parents to not do something, a lot of times it's more effective than the politicians telling their parents. So this idle-free thing sort of percolating up through the children, and it's important. And really, the point of it was, obviously, just shutting off your car at school zones isn't a huge deal, but the cumulative effect of it is, especially in that particular area around where people are breathing. And it made me think, what, you know, one of the problems we have in Utah, at least from my perspective, is that we love our cars. I think the data is clear. It's the most car-loving state in the union, if not next to Nevada, probably. The Mountain West, for sure. Our transit system is pretty good. Obviously, it's not as convenient as a car still. But it made me think maybe what we ought to do is start talking about and pushing a get-out-of-your-car-once-a-week thing. Just get people to make, and you know, you could say it's a sacrifice to use transit or bike or biking or different alternative or carpool. Because it kind of is. I mean, most of us, it's quicker for us to drive, and I know that. But I thought if we could start talking as an active transportation committee about ways to get people maybe once a week to commit to get out of their car for a commute that week, one time. Cumulative effect would be probably not huge, but it would start the ball rolling and maybe get people thinking a little bit about, if you really do want clean air, you're going to have to make some sacrifices to get it. There's just no easy way to give you clean air and then no cars and an easy way to work. Those are all mutually not inclusive to each other, at least it seems to be. So that was my thing, was take a chance to get out of your car maybe once a week or twice a week. I know Caldwell and Ogden did a year of biking, and you know, I don't know if he did it everywhere every time, but you know, just if everyone did that a couple times a week or once a week, it'd make a difference. And it would also heighten our awareness as to how if we do really want clean air, we're going to have to change our behavior a little bit as people to make it work. Because I don't think we can build roads, build our way out of it, or you know, we certainly can't build transit fast enough to make a difference. We're making huge strides on trails, and I'm really excited with Lehigh. Where's our Lehigh over here? You guys are connecting the Porter Rockwell Trail this year. I don't know if people realize how awesome that could be, but there's a lot of people that live near that trail and work near that trail, and there's serious potential for people to use it to get to work on a bike. And maybe it's a pedal assist bike or whatever it is, but there's real potential for commuting on that trail for employment between our two cities. That's huge, and if we could get, I know Pluralsight's been to have, they're building their world headquarters right in our city. It's right next to the trail, and they picked that spot. But they're going to have about 3,000 people coming to work there every day. You've got thousands over the point. We've got Adobe. I mean, but if there's a way, and that's a trail that actually could be used as a commuting highway. So anyway, that was my thoughts. Bearing in mind, I did drive here today, so I apologize for that. And I drive a truck, which is worse. No, it's gas. Diesel's too expensive. But that's just so I can hold my bike, so that's why I have a truck.
If I could piggyback on that just for a sec. Sorry, I always think I talk too loud. That trail that Mayor Walker's talking about, we've been working on for an awfully long time. One of the key things about getting these facilities on the ground is continuity of champions. We started actually working on that trail. The idea came about because of a fatality on East French Road in Draper at the point of the mountain. And that was in 2003, just to kind of give you an idea. When people ask me how expensive are trails to build, I tell them, I'll tell them, but I say, don't worry about the money. We can find the money. What we can't always find is the right of way. And so this, the winter bill is going to be huge if it can pass. The other thing is, just as a note to Draper, is that the landowner standing in the way of the trail for so many years was Geneva Rock. And they got the contract to build the trail. So we're looking
at that. Sometimes you just have to work that out.
I've been working on it for most of my career at MAG, and I would just say, if you ever get tired of doing this or ever get discouraged, don't. Things take a long time to happen sometimes.
I remember we went on a Railvolution a while back. I think you were with the, it was one in Minnesota. And they had a bike trail, it was an old railway corridor. And I remember, I couldn't believe the number of people that used it to get back and forth between those twin cities. They said in the winter, it's just the same use. They plow it before roads, and those folks have come to expect that's how they're going to get around.
Okay. Put the stop signs on the road and let the trail have
it. Yeah, we went and rode that trail. It was amazing. I think that our connected trail, when it's connected, is going to be like that. It's got the potential to be like that. I had another employer that's building a building up behind, a little further up the hill. The CEO came about a couple weeks ago. He said, how do I connect my building to that trail? I want to connect my office building to that trail. And I'm like, well, man, I don't know how we're going to do that. There's some other people between you. But we're working on a concept of doing that. But he wants his employees, he has a bunch of employees that live in Lehigh, he wants them to come up on that trail. So he's a biker. So, but I do think if we could push something like that, it might just get people thinking about, you know, we're going to have to make some sacrifices to make it better. And also show that we're willing to change.
Thank you. Oh, we have a couple over here. First, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention, I don't know if this is something that incorporated into the goals, but electric bikes are a true game changer. And we just did a trip to Japan, rode electric bikes extensively for the first time, and now in the process of doing a conversion, e-bike conversion, are in Camden. But Europe this year, electric bike sales last year, 2019, for the first time in history, exceeded all conventional bike sales. It is truly a game changer in getting more people out on bikes. And I think that's something that we could really think about and focus on. Is this going to make a huge difference?
Just to follow up, since you're walkers, my bike's on the trail. Yeah. I need my bike on the quarter block bike trail. It's a small thing, but looking at the connections across streets, Porter Rock Belt Trail, for example, in Sandy is really slow to ride because you have to, every time you cross a road, you know, a block out of the way or you know, go across the road where there's not good signaling or you have to wait you know, 7 minutes to cross. You know, I think I waited like 7 minutes to cross 90 South. And that connectivity gets lost. Davis County trails, you have all these barriers that you have to go through, and it makes the trail not a priority. The trail, it seems, always secondary to the automobile traffic. And so looking at those connection points as part of the bigger future plan.
Thank you.
I want to say, if any of you want to try a pedal assist bike, and see what it's like both on a paved trail and in our canyon. My city, we just bought 5 of them, so I can take people out and show them what we have going on. We also use them for our community policing program, but I can take any of you that want. If you want to ride Corner Canyon, even if you're not a biker, with those bikes you can become one. We can ride out to the end of this trail where we're talking about in Lehigh. They are a game changer. I bought one this year. I don't want any hate from anybody because you just as good a workout if you want, but they're a lot of fun. But they're also a way to, I mean, you can ride farther and have more fun doing it. It also makes available people who aren't necessarily riders. But they make a difference. They could be a legitimate commuting vehicle. The right one is faster than a car in most situations if you're under 7-8 miles. They're phenomenal. But if you want, I'll take anyone who wants to ride one and see what they're like. I'll take you up on the trail, I'll take you on the paved trail, whatever you want.
So this, we may want to incorporate something like that on one of our goals about coordinating. I don't know, I'm not aware of whether there are any restrictions on e-bikes on multi-use trails. You know, I know, you know, that's an issue with respect to, you know, mountain, you know, Forest Service, single track, and things like that, about whether they should be permitted or not. But we certainly should encourage, do what we can to encourage them their use on multi-use trails because they are a game changer. You know, they also enable, like, so I can ride, but my wife is not, but I can ride with her when she's on an e-bike. And that's really good for my marriage, and it's good for my wife's health. And it's good to be able to broaden the use of the trail systems that we're building to people that they're not really accessible to otherwise. So, you know, maybe the don't tell my wife I said the less fit of us, but the point is that it broadens the opportunity for people. And then, you know, that starting that way, maybe I'm hoping someday she won't need to access someday, right? You know, that's the goal, but it does, in terms of trying to make concrete progress, maybe one we want to add a goal that says coordinate, use of electronic assist bicycles on our trail systems. I'll make a motion.
All right, these are great suggestions. Do we have another one over here?
Yeah, I was just thinking, along with coordinating everything, communicating the successes that we all have had collectively, because when we build momentum by talking about what everyone's doing, that hopefully that helps get the message that there is momentum and that we want. This is a priority, and hopefully that will be contagious.
Yes, thank you. Okay.
All right. I'll sort of take all of this feedback and come back to the next meeting with some revised goals that you can look at and take a vote on, if that's all right.
That sounds good.
Okay, super. Thank you so much.
All right. Next item is to discuss our Transportation Investment Fund Active and Transit Transportation Investment Fund First Class Mile nominations.
This is just to wake myself up, so I sit.
Is this your house?
Wouldn't it be nice? how many in the room are aware of, before I say the acronym, what the TIF or TTIF is, or heard of those acronyms? Okay, most folks. So the Transportation Investment Fund Active and Transit Transportation Investment Fund First Last Mile are new opportunities provided by the state legislature for active transportation projects to be funded and constructed on their own out of the Transportation Investments Fund, which has traditionally been used to fund roadways. So this was a really big deal as far as our ability as active transportation professionals and advocates to find additional funding sources. Jim is confident that he can fund anything. Not everybody is all the time. And so we're excited for these new funds to be available. Just this last go-around, UDOT, so this was announced last year at the legislature. Is that right, Richard? And so Richard Brockmeyer and the team at UDOT have been working really hard to develop a nomination process for these projects, and also a prioritization process. So once something is nominated, it goes through a prioritization process to see how it stacks up against other projects. And just to give you a sense of the timeline, the nomination call that went out to all of the local agencies and entities came out the week of Thanksgiving in November and closed on January 6th. So it's, 48 days or something like that. And for the Transportation Investment Fund active nominations, so this can be any active transportation project, theoretically. That's a basic requirements for nominations. Had to be one, on an approved active transportation plan. Two, has to mitigate traffic congestion on the state highway system. Three, the local agency has to take on maintenance responsibility of the project. And had to be a 40% match, which could be cash or in kind as far as the cost of the project. So regionally significant. This is a good way to sum that up. So the Transit Transportation Investment First Class Mile nominations, so this is anything that ties in to create better access to transit. That's requirement number one for a nomination. Connect and improve access to transit, similar to the TIF active, local agency maintenance responsibility, and the 40% match, again, cash or in kind. So as of January 6th, the nominations that came in, again, to distinguish them from being prioritized, the nominations for the TIF active, these were all of the cities or entities that submitted. So Kaysville, Layton, Mag, Ogden, Riverton, Salt Lake City, who did 8 projects.
Sorry, Ted, you had
to Those are statewide or within the...
This is just our region. Thank you for clarification. Yep, just WFRC in nine regions, so not statewide. There was only a handful of others around the state that did this. But Taylorsville, Tooele, West Jordan submitted two, and West Valley submitted a project. On the TTIF side, TTIF first mile, last mile, Lehigh submitted two projects, Provo City, Sandy, Salt Lake City, six projects, and Tooele County, two projects. Again, so an active transportation project that would provide better access to transit. So in total, there were 13 agencies between these two funding pots. 18 TIF projects, $24.6 million requested, 12 TTIF first mile, last mile projects, with $11 million requested. And the reason we're bringing this up, just want to get a reaction to the nomination requirements that we went through and the number of nominations throughout the region. And wondering what people's impressions of this were, how they felt it was communicated, what could be maybe looked at for the next round. This is a yearly round of possibilities for projects being funded. And just want to turn the time over to the committee and get some feedback on these numbers and nominations.
The number of nominations seems pretty low to me. But it also is a new, I mean, obviously little cities like ours don't have people actively looking for, you know, all of these grants, and so we're aware of them, but we're catching up to speed, and so maybe it was such a quick turnaround that we didn't have as many applicants as we will have moving forward, hopefully.
There are other thoughts on that, that maybe smaller communities didn't have time to ramp up, so speak, yeah, Jim.
I mean, one of the things that I think stand out to me as being a barrier, especially to the small communities, is the 40% match requirement. I think that was a, I think that's a hard one for even the larger communities to come up with. Some of these, you know, some of these projects are fairly large, and even for a fairly, you know, fairly good sized community with resources, coming up with the 40% match, especially on that short time frame, I think was a daunting prospect for a lot of cities who would have applied for it. Either if we can address that a little bit, or give them, you know, a bit longer time to prepare their budgets, what they need to do to come up with the match required, I think will be a big deal. I think that was the thing that stood out to me far and away above anything else in the process.
Does anybody else have an impression on GM or Mayor Shalom's comments? By trying to get a sense of if people agree or don't agree, you know, as this moves forward.
Sorry, Mayor Padilla, and then back to Mark.
Okay, I just want to say, yeah, I agree. It's a 40% match is better than a 50% match, but it's still a huge hurdle to overcome for a small. I mean, we don't even have our transportation plan, so we have to overcome that barrier first before we can move forward. But that is a big hurdle.
I was just going to say, we appreciated you reaching out to our community and letting us be aware of it. We weren't ready for this yet, but we need to answer some of the questions before we do.
Yes, Chris.
So my job is basically to get communities connected with these things, and I think it's really important to...
What's your name, Chris?
Oh, sorry, Chris. What's your name? Mike Bishop. I think it's really important to communicate to your staff that you value these kinds of grants, because your staff act as like a filtering process for these kinds of grants, because, like, I know Hugh sent out an email to everybody, and I also emailed and communicated with a lot of people, and I don't know that that's always getting to you guys that this money exists, if it's not a priority for your staff. And also, correct me if I'm wrong, but they have 5 years to sort of cobble together this money if they wanted to create the matching funds, right? They just have to commit to creating the matching funds.
I'm going to ask Richard to confirm that.
So on the TIF active side, yeah, we're programmed with TIF funds out through 2024. So in terms of the nomination, it was just providing information on what sources would be used for the 40% match. For TTIP, first last mile, that money is more immediately available, so a shorter time frame for getting that together. But we wouldn't be looking for the agreements, sort of signed agreements on what the actual funding source was until a decision was made by our Transportation Commission to actually fund a project.
Any other comments or thoughts on this first round of this? Okay.
And maybe to just reiterate your last question of are there any other thoughts? If there are any other communities that you felt like, A, you looked at it and you didn't apply, was there a reason you can put your finger on why not? And question B is, if you wish you had applied but didn't, was there a reason there? Was it that you weren't ready, it was the timing, and any kind of feedback like that? And the reason, part of the reason for exploring these questions is that it's year one, right? A new pot of money that legislators made available. UDOT has been a terrific partner in reaching out and involving all of us in talking about how do we all administer these things. And so it's a useful time to just kind of take a quick step back, do some initial reflection under the notion that over time there may be some potential course corrections. And so, anyway.
All right, seeing none, I'm going to go Jordy and Jim.
Only going to ask the question maybe that you got in. Is this the schedule? Should the communities be expecting December as the next application? Do you know if that's going to be bumped? Have you guys adjusted that or talked about
that? We haven't made a determination on when we'd open up. I think, you know, we're learning from this first experience probably. You know, we're trying to fit specific timelines for, you know, programming funds. I think our intent is probably to leave the nomination process open a little bit longer, started a little bit earlier, but we're still working out the details of what that would be, and probably not sending it out the week of Thanksgiving would be something we could look at.
I think, and addressing this to Richard and to you, is that we appreciate all the work that went into getting this on a short time frame. They were on a rather short time frame getting this ready to go. And I think that their willingness to be open to feedback and to adjustment as we go along is going to make this a very important piece of active transportation going forward. The money is huge, and having the state be willing to step up to the plate and make real money available. One of the things that I'll just kind of remind a lot of people of is that in our long range plan, we use a $1 million per mile of trail, an asphalt trail. And when you have $1 million per mile for that, something, you know, that'll vary a little bit, but that's pretty average. When we build our trails, that's what we budget for our base budget. And so these are not cheap. These are expensive. We are working on just for instance, we were just looking at Stockton, and Stockton has 700 people. Is that about right?
About that, yeah.
About right. Okay. And so for them to build a mile of trail and come up with $400,000 is going to be difficult on a real short time frame. And if they can work with partners and work with the MFRC and others to come up with that. And that makes a lot of sense. But that, I think that would be my immediate feedback, Richard, would be that 40% is a big, big hurdle for the smaller communities, because these projects, unlike mountain bike trails, which are built largely by volunteer, you can do many, many, many miles for $100,000. In the urban areas, you can do a mile of trail for about $1 million. And it gets really expensive really quick.
Jim, are you referring to federal dollars for that?
No, I'm talking general.
State money. Same. Okay. The other thing I was going to mention is not only the 40% is a steep, but then taking on the maintenance of it, that has impacts in other city departments that can be a barrier.
I think the maintenance is a large issue going forward, absolutely. But especially the smaller communities, when they get started, we're working, just for example, I'm working with Goshen City, which is kind of a similar situation. There are about 900 people. We are working with them on a grant through MAG for a mile-long trail that will encompass their entire city. And the current estimate for that is $1.2 million. They're going to have a real hard time coming up with even the small match that MAG requires. And so we're working with UDOT, because US 6 runs through Goshen, so UDOT can contribute to, you know, some of those things to help find that match. And there are ways to do this. But sometimes these communities need to have, I think our second go around, whether that match requirement stays the same or not, I think our second go around will be much more successful. It was just a very short, intense, are we ready to do this? Can we do this? If we're not ready to do this, we don't want to get rejected, because if we're not ready to do this, we don't want to be accepted and then have to turn the money back, because then UDOT's going to look at us and go, we don't want to deal with you guys again. So just something to kind of keep in mind for the future.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hugh, and all of you. I agree. It would be nice to have that match looked at. I'm thinking of my own city, but I'm sure a lot of cities are in the same situation. So that would help out. Yes.
Maybe one question or clarification. I mean, you guys did not set the match, right? That was set in statute, right?
Correct.
So if a change happens, we need to talk to people that are meeting right now at the,
yep,
on the Hill, right?
Correct. That requirement is part of the law.
Yeah. And we realize that this isn't aggressive for you. This is just something that I think that we probably want to try to address.
I'd just like to acknowledge that Mayor Capucci came in, and we'd like to welcome her here, and also wish her the best of luck. She's the running mate now for John Huntsman Jr. for governor, and so congratulations and good luck. Awesome. Okay. Next on our list, Sarah Hodson is going to speak to us on the results of the Get Help in Utah Illumination Lab.
Thank you. I appreciate having a few minutes to talk about a focus group that we did last year, and I will talk fast and try to get through the results very quickly so that if there's any questions or thoughts about the results, we'd love to hear those as well. So I'm with Get Healthy Utah. We work around improving access to healthy eating and physical activity. Our board of directors represents a number of people who are working to improve health in Utah. And one of the things that we did last year was, with a partnership with the Utah League of Cities and Towns, we sent out a survey, initially an email survey, to find out what are communities thinking about community health and what are they doing to improve community health. And then after that email survey, we thought we needed to dig into the results a little bit more. So we did what's called an Illumination Lab, which is essentially an online focus group. And WFRC helped recruit some participants. I think some of you were on that, an Illumination Lab, and participated in that. And essentially what that was is an online focus group, so people could hear the live facilitator. We couldn't see each other, but you could see the answers as they popped up on the screen. So a question, the facilitator would ask a question, and you would type in your response, and then you could see what other people were saying. So we had 28 people from across the state. You can see here kind of where people came from and who they were that participated in the focus group. And again, we were asking about community health. And so the first question was around, how do you prioritize health in your community, or how important is community health to you? And you can see that the results show that it was a low to mid-level priority for most of the cities that participated. That probably makes sense. There's a lot of other things on your plate, things that you're thinking about and worried about. Community health is not a top priority. You can see some of the answers people gave. I suspect the top answer came from somebody that's here today as well that participated. And then we had people rank, define for themselves what does community health mean, what are the things that contribute to community health, and then rank them. And outside of physical activity, the ones that are most important for our mission, chronic disease, healthy food, healthy diet, obesity, were ranked the lowest, so the least important in terms of community health. And the things that were ranked highest were safety, mental health, those sorts of things, which again makes sense probably in the way that communities are prioritizing their needs and funding. We asked about what would motivate you, or what does motivate you to focus on community health, and essentially it was money. Those are the top answers, funding. I think that's interesting in the context of the last conversation, that when there's funding available, that's maybe motivating to do things. We asked about who's responsible for the health of the community, and the overwhelming response was that it's an individual's responsibility when we're talking about healthy eating or physical activity, and then not so much with mental health. So again, that kind of makes sense. People feel like we make our choices about healthy eating and physical activity, and it's a little bit different with mental health. Those results align with, we did a larger full community survey in 2017 and asked the same question, and we found a very similar result where people in Utah really feel a high sense of individual responsibility. And then we asked some questions about social determinants of health. How many of you are familiar with the term social determinants of health? How many that don't work in a health department? So a few. Okay, good. It's similar to the results we found here. So you may be more familiar with the term, like where we live, work, and play affects our health, or your zip code matters more than your genetic code. It's all the same general idea that things in our social and environment impact our decisions and our behaviors, and those things have a greater impact on our health outcome than something like our health care or our genetics. So this is a really big concept in public health right now. So those few of us for public health agencies, this is something that we are talking and thinking about a lot. And because of the way that you approach social determinants of health, it's things like adequate income, adequate housing, educational opportunities, jobs, those sorts of things. So those are sort of outside of the realm of what we might normally think about as health, but it's all interrelated. So we wanted to see how our communities thinking about that. And we asked, do you know what social determinants of health are? About half of the people, or more than half, did not know what that term was. So I think that's helpful to those of us in public health, that when we're using that term, people don't know what we're talking about, and we should be talking about it in a different way. But when we did ask about individual determinants, so like, do you know that adequate income affects health outcomes, or access to educational opportunities affects health outcomes? There was a high approval of those individual determinants. So people understood the determinants relationship, but not necessarily the concept of social determinants of health. So that was an interesting finding for us. And then related to that, we asked, do you believe that all members of your community have equal access to opportunities to be healthy? And it was about a 50-50 split of people that felt like everyone in their community has an equal access to an opportunity to be healthy. And this, frankly, was a concerning finding to us, because the reality when we look at health outcomes is that's not true. There are lots of people in communities that don't have an equal access to opportunities to be healthy. So this was a little bit of a concern to us, this finding here. Okay, and then the other two things we looked at were specific strategies. The first related to physical activity. So this is a very confusing slide, but essentially the kind of turquoise color, these were evidence-based strategies that we gave to the focus group, and then they ranked them on, do you believe this is an effective strategy? And then second, are you currently doing it, or do you have plans to do it? So the turquoise color means that they thought it was effective and they're either currently doing it or have plans to do it. So that's great. All the turquoise ones means that people say, yes, we believe these are effective and we want to do them, or we're currently doing them. So that's things like safe routes to school, complete street policy, AT plans, kind of all of the things essentially that this group talks about. And I think this is a really good finding to show us that the people in this room and people outside of this room who are working on this have had some success. The communities understand that these are successful strategies to impact health. That's what we were specifically asking about. and they want to be doing those strategies. So I feel like this was a finding that we were like, that's great. That means we've progressed and we're doing some great work there. On the other hand, we asked about healthy eating, and you can see it's essentially the exact opposite. So these are strategies, and the results show that people felt like they were not effective and they weren't doing them. So things like a farmer's market that accepts SNAP benefits, which is food stamps, or healthy food policies in government facilities, or zoning around urban agriculture, all of these strategies, which we know are effective strategies, but the participants in the study didn't feel like they were effective and they weren't doing them. So this was interesting to us to think about the difference in the way that cities view their role in physical activity related to active transportation and their role in healthy eating was significantly different. I'm going to skip those questions just for a minute. So we have two kind of events related to these results, and I'm still interested to hear your thoughts about them. But one, we're working with the Utah League of Cities and Towns, and at their April conference in St. George, we'll be announcing a Healthy Cities designation. So this will be a list of strategies that a city can check off, and if you're doing it, then you get kind of the logo seal of approval that you can use on your website and in marketing materials. The designation program will open in April, and then at the September League conference, they will award people who have completed the designation and will be awarded at the conference, and then they'll also be able to be awarded again at their own city council meeting if they're interested in getting some kind of local press or something like that. So we're in the process of working on what those criteria look like and what the name will be. It's very, it's not completed yet, but we're really excited, and the league has been really interested in promoting the health of communities, so this is an exciting partnership. So be on the lookout for these criteria, and they're designed to be things that cities are doing. We want people to get the criteria. The point is not to exclude cities, but to show, look at what we're already doing to improve the health of our communities, and maybe picking one or two more strategies to help improve that. So we're really excited about that. We also have we do an annual meeting, and this year it will be in March 26th, and the agenda for the meeting is focused around these focus study results. So we'll be having Gabriel Kaplan come from the Department of Health in Colorado to talk about why where we live impacts our health. Ted is gonna come and speak about active transportation and the success we've had there, and then we have someone talking about healthy eating and what we can do better in terms of healthy eating. So if you're not on our list and haven't gotten this, maybe Katie, I can send you the registration link, but you're welcome to come, and I think it will be a really informative day about where we've had success around communities and health and where there's work to be done. Okay, so I have a couple minutes left. I'd be interested in any questions about the survey results or any thoughts or insights into where maybe the difference between active transportation and healthy eating. Yes, thank you.
Sarah, I just wanted to say I participated in this, and it was really thought-provoking. As each question came out, and everyone, they were saying, now come on, Mayor, move along, and I thought, it's a lot to take in. I mean, are we doing this? I mean, I just really thought it was a good self-evaluation for me to do when I was considering my city, and it really pushed me, and I really enjoyed participating in it, because then I was able to get the results and take it to my city council, and we were able to talk through it. So thank you for pushing me to be on this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate your participation, and I'm happy to send out the full results if people are interested, because I think that part of that what was interesting for participants is you could see what other people were saying, so you could see, oh, they're doing this thing, and I haven't thought about doing that thing, and maybe get some ideas there, so we can share the full results as well.
So I apologize, I'm very new with UTA and new to Utah in general, but some of those results are very concerning. And so I kind of want to know if you have next steps on what you're going to be doing to maybe strategize or work with the communities of, incentivizing you to help them. I don't know, I just want to see what you're kind of
like in particular around healthy eating or which results, yeah.
Yeah, healthy eating, just kind of being, if you want to go back.
Yes. We were certainly concerned about this as well, because our mission is both active living and healthy eating. There's a lot of great work happening in the state right now around healthy eating. There's a significant amount of funding for Double Up Food Bucks, which is a program that allows SNAP recipients to double the amount of fruits and vegetables they can get at farmers market, and there's an effort to put that in retail stores. So there's a lot of good things happening. I think we need to do a better job of communicating that with community leaders and trying to make the case of the importance of healthy eating. And our retreat in March will be designed around having that conversation together and be a good stepping stone to think about what are the next steps. But that's a really good point.
Mayor Schulman, could you go to the previous slide right before this one?
Oh, this one?
Or to that one, sorry.
Yay!
Partly I'm seeking to understand this better, but an initial reaction to this is that when I looked at all of those turquoise squares, which I take to mean our community is feeling like we are doing a great job here.
Or plans to do it.
Or have plans to do it. And I glance at some of those things and think we need better plans and we need way better execution. And so it surprises me a little bit. I wonder if we are overly optimistic about how we are doing collectively as communities. I'm not sure what the reaction of the committee is on that question for you, Sarah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, because you might say, well, I know they're not doing this. Again, it's the 28 who participated in this particular focus group. And I do think because WFRC helped us recruit for it, we got people in this room and who are already thinking about it, who are participants. So it could certainly be skewed in a way that it's the cities who are doing it. It's also their perspective. They might think they're doing a great job, and you might say that's not a great job, what you're doing.
Well, and I don't mean to, you know, I'm not trying to put down anybody. I'm just thinking aloud about, well, what's the status on the ground versus how we think we're doing it. And should we raise our expectations collectively?
Yeah,
great
point.
Did this one about the open space, does that mean that the survey respondents thought that they were doing a great job acquiring maintaining open space, but that it wasn't very effective in improving health? Is that what that means?
Yes, exactly, yes. So that one that's sort of the red color.
But you're saying that all of these strategies are
correct. Yes. Correct. Yeah, so this is just their perception of the person in the focus group, their perception that it's not effective. So either, who knows, they've done something in their community and didn't think it worked, or they just don't believe it's an effective strategy.
Trails and walking paths and all that would be very
effective, but not open space. Yeah, and we didn't ask, why do you think this is not effective? So I don't have any more detail about that, but it's their own perception that that's not an effective strategy.
Is that because it's their own perception of what open space means?
Sure, yeah.
Green space, open space, I think means something different to every community.
Any other questions or thoughts? No, I appreciate the time, and I hope that a lot of you can come to our retreat and learn more, and I think we'll have a good discussion there as well. The outline for the day is really designed to have presentation, but also discussion and get feedback in that setting. So thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. I have to admit, I've always understood my role in physical activity and promoting that in my city, but I honestly have never really thought about eating habits, healthy eating. And so I appreciate that, and I'll work harder on that from now on. So, did you have something, Rich?
It kind of goes back to my comment earlier about blue zones. All these things kind of tend to want to happen in silos, and it's really difficult to get them all to connect together. And that's the advantage of that blue zones program, is it organizes the volunteers, the businesses, the schools, the employers, the restaurants, everybody together with a common goal and a common united mission. I loved this, that it was insightful. And I just really hope that we can look to maybe find that way to get all this stuff coordinated. And now, I guess there's more than one way to do it. The Blue Zones has figured out how to do it, and if we can come together and then enlist a partner to help do this, it takes a lot of volunteers,
Boy, it really helps to unite a community and is a big benefit to each community. Lowers health care costs, it extends life, it reduces diabetes incidents, et cetera, goes on and on. It's just a, you know, this kind of thing is hugely effective at raising the quality of life in the community.
Great. All right. We'll now turn the time over to Bert Granberg.
Good morning. My name is Bert Granberg, and I lead the analytics group here at WFRC. I am going to give a brief introduction to sort of what we do generally, and then dive into an update on some of the active transportation related tools and data that we're working on for the region. The analytics group is engaged in two sort of primary families of activities. First, we're working on, especially with our partners at MAG, on forecasting tools and projections into the future in terms of how our transportation system is going to perform and how land use and residential and employment centers are going to form through the horizon year of our long-range plans. We also do GIS mapping type support for various programs in WFRC, including the long-range plan, the transportation improvement program, the TLC grant program, and a variety of other things, including the WASA Choice visioning effort. And our group has worked to build an interactive map that shows the transportation, the land use, economic development, and recreation type future in this Wasatch Choice 2050 interactive map, and the wall map that I'm blocking your view from right now that's behind us. And that includes roadway, transit, active transportation project types represented in sort of that get in your time machine and go to 2050 and see what it looks like. All right, so moving past the introduction for our group, I want to talk about the active transportation related analytics work that we're doing. This is a newer focus area for us, but certainly there are a lot of compelling reasons for us to jump into this space with our partner agencies. First and foremost, the Wasatch Choice 2050 goals of providing transportation choices and strong connections to quality of life and economic development. That's sort of the high-level reason. But for sure, active transportation as a mode is growing. There are lots of different options out there, and it's getting more attention in the policy and budgeting space, rightfully deserved. And among the region partners in our region, WFRC, MAG, UDOT, UTA, there's a consensus that we should be applying the same or similar level of rigor to looking at active transportation in our future as we do for roadways and transit. So the first project I'm going to kind of bring you up to speed on very quickly is a project that UDOT completed in partnership with a lot of us, and in particular with the state's map technology office, AGRC. And this project was called the Multimodal Network Connectivity Project. UDOT applied for and received an FHWA grant to basically implement a set of metrics from the guidebook that FHWA put out. They basically had a collection of metrics that you could apply to your region and invited folks to apply for funding and put the data together and calculate the metrics that they thought were most important to their region. And the metrics that were selected and implemented for this project were trying to figure out the completeness of the active transportation network and try to map that, express that, communicate that. Also the density of facilities that are offered. You'll see a lot more facilities in Salt Lake City than some other parts of the region. We wanted to be able to quantify that. Look at the directness of suitable routes. Maybe that you can get from A to B on a safe route, but if that means that your travel time is three times more than it would be in a direct route, that's probably an issue. We wanted to be able to pinpoint those spots and quantify that. And then also, we wanted to be able to look at travel sheds for folks using active transportation modes. So if you're on a bicycle or walking or e-bikes, I think is something that we'll look at in the near future. What can I get to in a certain amount of time, and what's in that travel shed in terms of places that I need to or want to go? And then level of traffic stress became a big point of emphasis, and quantifying that and building that into some of these route-based calculations. So these are the five metrics that were implemented as part of this project. The data was assembled. We built automated routines to calculate this, these metrics, so we can apply them in the future. We looked at the results, and we'll be sharing those results out so that other people can use them and we can monitor progress. And I think one of the key things about this project is...
Do you care if I just interject really quickly while you're on that slide? If you don't mind, Mayor Shogun, just go back one slide. Sometimes it's tricky when you go down the technical or nerd rabbit hole.
Oh yes, I forgot to admit that I am a nerd.
you're among friends. But I think what's interesting about doing this kind of stuff is that there are things, we know this, there are things that we can do as communities that affect the propensity of people to hop on a bike, right? I mean, just to Sarah's point from her slide deck just before, and if we measure those things, then the idea is, well, people can see on a map, okay, in this area, we don't have all of those ingredients together that increase the likelihood that people will hop on a bike. But we can affect, here's our weak link. Our weak link might be street connectivity. Our weak link might be a land development issue. Maybe we don't have a mix of uses. We need to, if we get information out there to people so they can understand, well, in my city, I can affect the propensity by doing A, B, or C. That's the whole rationale behind this kind of work. And I just wanted to, I hope that's in high center your presentation.
Yeah, I mean, you can't manage, you can't progress what you can't measure in some ways, or at least it's harder to do that. And we want to have the infrastructure that lets us inform the decision-making process the same or similar level of rigor that we have for the other modes. So one of the things we learned about this project was the data that we have on bike facilities, in particular pedestrian facilities also, it's not quite good enough to do what we want yet, and UDOT has taken on a lot of the responsibility for quality checking the existing conditions data around the state so that these tools that we've built will produce better quantification and illustration of what's going on. And that work is, I think it's supposed to wrap up in early spring. We've got the tools ready, and we've tested them against actual data. The data's gonna get better, and then I think you'll see that we'll be sharing the results of this far and wide. So the second project I wanna talk about is something that we've just kicked off in the past few months. We call it the Micromobility Toolset. This is a joint agency project between WFRC, MAG, UDOT, and UTA. Everyone kicked in to fund this. And we're building a framework to do analysis on all ATU-related modes, but we're starting with the first phase of this project on focusing specifically on bike tools. We want to be able to characterize and communicate the differences in demand for cycling around the region, and we want to do this using that the same sort of level of stress concept that was employed in the project I just described. Not all cyclists, micromobility users have the same comfort level, and we want to be able to do analysis for folks who are just getting into this and see what their opportunities are, but also be able to quantify things for people who are avid bike commuters and recreational cyclists. So characterize demand. We also want to be able to have this tool set inform project prioritization, help people to understand better what the current needs are, what the near-term future needs are, what the market is for picking up these, picking up more micro-mobility use, certainly identifying important gaps that you want to focus on filling sooner rather than later, and then forecasting how much future use we're going to see for biking and other modes. And then the last point about this project is what we're building is going to inform the big workforce regional travel demand model. So when that is looking at what types of trips people are making, it can better factor in the availability of cycling and other active transportation modes within specific areas or the higher likelihood that users would use this when they take trips. So I'm going to conclude by talking about data. We're putting a lot of data together. I already talked about how we thought we had a good start, but we needed to go back and tune this a little bit more with in terms of existing conditions. It's great that UDOT is putting resources towards that, and the work they're doing to gather the existing bicycle facilities is going to go onto the state map layer of road center lines. And this is like the gold standard data set that everyone in transportation uses at a state and regional level. You'll go in there, you'll see street names and addresses, and right there with it, you'll see, is there a bike facility on the left side of the road? How about on the right side? What type of bike facility is it? And what are the plans for future bike facilities that are in the local and regional active transportation plans? And I included a map here that Bike Utah has on their website that shows the communities in green that already have active transportation plans, and yellow are the ones that are funded and in progress right now. So there's a lot of plan facilities that we're going to gather and put into these data sets. I mentioned the multimodal network analysis and the ability to compute travel sheds at various levels of stress. So how far can a level one user get around their area of interest versus someone who's more comfortable, more avid? We've got data sets available of all the AT projects that are in the phase RTP plan, and coming out of the micro mobility tool set, we're going to have these demand surfaces. We're going to be able to look at the landscape of active transportation demand in terms of the demographics and how they relate to the types of use that we would expect, but also urban form, level of traffic stress, and existing facilities. And all that will come together into essentially a layer that characterizes the landscape of someone's likelihood to take a bike trip now and in the near future as more facilities come online. So a lot of exciting work going on in the data world and the tool development as well. We're committed to publishing everything that we create in terms of tools and data sets online and making that widely available as sort of an open source type offering. We already have a number of active transportation data sets online from and accessible from our maps and data link on the WFRC website, and anyone can go view this data, download it, and that's what I have presented to you today. So thank you for your time and contact information in case you have any questions.
Thank you so much, Bert. This looks like a great tool for improving and developing our active transportation system.
There's a lot of work in motion, and it only happens because I think we're able to work so well across agencies as partners. So it's really been a pleasure.
That's great. Yes, Jim, do you have a...
Sorry, I'll make one last comment on this. And I've told Bert this before, but Bert is my new hero. I think this is one of those things that we've wanted for a long time in the AT world, in order to have our agencies, even MAG, we've been doing this for a long time. We have a hard time within the agency taking active transportation as seriously as we do in other modes of transportation. And I think this is one of the reasons that we don't, is because we don't have a way to measure it. this is going to, this is going to take us, I think, a long way towards that sense that we're bringing AT up to the level of policy and thinking of the rest of the modes.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity to nerd out a little bit.
Thank you, Bert. All right, very quickly, do you have any agency, city, county program updates?
Yeah, I've got a word that there's the old fucking Sunset Sewer from Sylvester County Park putting together an Douglas County after transportation plan and a RFC comment through March 1st, 2020. And they have a interactive map.
Great. All right, thank you.
I just want to provide a quick update. We extended that look on the period of purchases to include a lot of comment.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else?
I just briefly note that that project is in turn funded partly by UDOT, UTA, and WFRC.
Is that what you were going to say? Thank you.
What's that?
Okay. All right. If there's nothing else, then we will just draw your attention. We'd like anyone who rode their bike today or who walked here or took transit, please stand, because we have a little something for you. Oh, to acknowledge you. Way to go.
If I was only just coming out in one place.
Okay. Just so you know, our next Active Transportation Committee meeting is on March 11th at 9:45, same time, and we'll be reviewing TAP applications. Also, new committee member orientation at Wasatch Front Regional Council is February 27th at 1:30 p.m. And then I'll direct your attention to your agenda to look at the other upcoming events that we have. So our very last portion of our agenda is the Utah Open and Public Meetings Act video. I understand and realize that a lot of you have already seen this, and so if you have, you're welcome to leave after we are going to adjourn now, but following our video presentation. So if you've already seen that, you're welcome to go after we adjourn. And please, if you're sticking around and want to talk to someone, please do it in the hallway. So those that are listening to the video can pay attention. We appreciate it. So now I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Please state your name and feedback.
So moved.
Okay, Mayor Walker. And do I have a second? Second. Thank you, guys. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we will adjourn that following the video. Thank you, everybody, for coming, and we'll see you on March 11th.
So what's the Open and Public Meetings Act? It's the state law that ensures government actions and deliberations are openly conducted. I'll be content to keep in mind that this video is an overview, and exceptions may exist based on your identity type. So what's considered an open and public meeting? It's when a governing body wants to discuss or act upon government business. It includes meetings sometimes referred to as workshops or executive sessions. Regular meetings, public hearings, meetings, and emergency meetings are all open and public meetings. Open and public meetings are open chance for social meetings. A public hearing is a type of open and public meeting where citizens have a reasonable opportunity to speak. Public hearings happen when a government adopts a budget or it raises or increases taxes or fees. An electronic meeting is a type of open and public meeting that's convened by Parliament, such as the Utah National Assembly. Remember, the governing body must adopt a resolution or ordinance allowing an open and public meeting is closed to discuss any of the following: a person's character, competence or health, security personnel, devices or systems deployment, collective bargaining, litigation, purchase, sale, or lease of property, and open
from discussions about the unity for completing the transaction on the best terms, investigations of criminal misconduct, and private protected information for the Utah Security Code, including trade secrets. Two-thirds of the governing body need to vote yes to close the meeting. Quick math, 2 divided by 3 equals 66.7%. Let's say my organic body was 5 members.
Good
luck. It's good to see you. Yes, it equals 60%, which is not equal to or greater than 66.7%, which means you're 1 member short, and instead we need 4 out of 5 members to vote yes. During a closed meeting, the governing body can interview someone who is filling a position, discuss filling a midterm vacancy in a temporary absence, discuss the care of your confidence or health of a person who is now submitted for consideration to fill a midterm vacancy or temporary absence, or approve any ordinance, resolution, rule, regulation, contract, or other. The closed meeting is discussing the person's character, confidence, or health, or various personnel, devices, or systems to hold on. No recording or minutes are required. However, the presiding member needs to sign a sworn written statement stating such. If the closed meeting is held for any other reason, the recording must be made. Emergency meetings may be held to discuss an urgent matter due to unforeseen circumstances. In order to hold the meeting, the best notice that's feasible is provided with the time, location, or topics to be considered. The attendees may have to contact all governing body members and the governing body majority of the terms of the meeting. Entities that hold regular meetings will be advised to vote at least annually on your meeting schedule. As all upcoming meetings include date, time, and place. For entities that don't hold regular meetings, 24 hours notice must be provided. All meetings, whether regularly scheduled in advance over the course of the year, or scheduled as needed, must provide no less than 24 hours notice on meeting agendas. If a public hearing is held, public notice requirements change. Make sure to distinguish between regular meeting notice requirements and public hearing notice requirements. For regular meetings, an entity is only required to notify a newspaper and doesn't need to pay for publishing notice. For public hearings, notice must be published in at least 1 issue of a newspaper. If a newspaper of general circulation isn't available, written notice is posted in 3 public places at the entity's boundaries. Regular meetings require 24 hours notice. Public hearings require 7 days notice. For both regular meetings and public hearings, written notice must be posted at the principal office of the governing body, or, if no such office exists, at the building where the meeting will be held. Governing bodies must also provide notice of open and public meetings on the Public Notice website at publicnotice.utah.gov. By posting on the website and providing the email of the local newspaper, governing bodies can also meet the requirement to notify a newspaper. However, other requirements such as publishing the newspaper still apply. Typically, posting on the Public Notice website is done by the records officer, reporter, or clerk. However, the governing body's responsibility is to provide it. State Archives has prepared a training manual and quick guide for owners of posters, as well as training videos that can be accessed at their website at archives.utah.gov. If your entity is increasing a fee or undergoing a taxation or a property tax increase, be aware that there are additional notice and posting requirements. Public meeting agendas need to include reasonably specified topics to be considered, with each topic listed under a separate agenda item on the meeting agenda. The governing body may not consider a topic in an open meeting that wasn't on the agenda. If a new topic not on the agenda is raised by the public during an open meeting, the governing body may discuss the topic. However, final action may not be taken on the new topic during that meeting. Meeting minutes and an audio recording are required for all open meetings, with limited exceptions. When an open or closed meeting is required to be recorded, it must be unedited and contain all the portions of the meeting. Recordings of open meetings must be made available within 3 days. Every entity needs to establish procedures for the governing body's approval of minutes. Pending minutes are written minutes prepared in draft form and are subject to change before being approved by the governing body. Pending minutes must contain a clear indication, such as a draft or pending watermark, that the governing body hasn't yet approved the minutes, and that they're subject to change. Pending minutes must be made available within 30 days. Approved minutes are written minutes of a meeting that have been approved by the governing body. Approved minutes are the official record of a meeting that must be made available within 30 days. Whoever is responsible for taking the minutes during meetings, typically the records officer, recorder, or clerk, needs to be familiar with what often requires be contained in the minutes. When a governing body closes a meeting, the following must be publicly announced and entered into the minutes of the open meeting at which the closed meeting was approved. The reason or reasons for holding a closed meeting, the location where the closed meeting will be held, and the vote of each member of the governing body, either for or against the motion to close the meeting. The recording and any minutes must include the date, time, and location of the meeting, the names of the governing body members present and absent, and the names of all others present, except where disclosure would infringe on the confidentiality necessary to fulfill the original purpose of closing the meeting. For more information, access our local government resource center at resources.auditor.utah.gov.
Hey, Jim.